continue with Brihad Bhagavatamrita, and some of you are not familiar with what that is. So, Brihad Bhagavatamrita is a very relishable description of a search by Narada Muni. There's two parts to Brihad Bhagavatamrita. The first part that we've been covering is Narada Muni's search for the greatest recipient of Krishna's mercy. It's a story within a story within a story within a story, but that's the theme. Narada is on a quest. And as the search progresses, Narada becomes more and more uncontrollably enlivened. By the time he reaches Dwarka, he's in a condition that the residents of Dwarka have never seen him. Literally exhibiting all the sattvika bhavas and sanchari bhavas, and he's in a profound state of ecstasy. So in the section that we covered this afternoon was Narada's being sent by Prahlad to go see Hanuman. And that was very nice. We ended with Hanuman in moods of extreme, like conflicting emotions of ecstasy and sobriety and humility. And the sobriety and humility went out. He decides to stay at Kimpurusha Loka and wait for Lord Ram to call him. Anyway, so there are seven chapters in this. There's two parts. The first part is Narada's quest, and the parts that we covered in Gita Nagari is the first part is search on earth. He meets a brahmana and he meets a king, and then the king sends him to the devas. So the second chapter is the heavenly region, Divya, and then Indra and Brahma send him to Lord Shiva, and particularly this is the abode of Lord Shiva that's beyond. There are different abodes of Lord Shiva. We're most familiar with Kailash, on the precincts of, or the suburbs of Kuvera's residence. But this particular Brahma sends him instead to Shivaloka, which is a place beyond the layers of the universe, in the spiritual sky, but not at the in the region of Haridam or Vaikuntha. So from there he goes, as we covered this afternoon, but he's then sent by Lord Shiva to Vaikuntha. But he doesn't even go to Vaikuntha, he goes to those who are in Vaikuntha mood by first visiting Prahlad. He already did that. He just fooled around with all those gadgets over here. He tilted it, he did everything. He's the sound man over there, Gotam. And Prahlad was very, very moving section, but Prahlad very humbly says that I just fix my mind upon the Supreme Lord, but I don't do any service. And as we know from Bhagavad Gita, the Supreme Lord is only understood through service, so you should go to find someone who's always serving him. You should go to Hanuman. There's many exchanges, but so on Prahlad's enthusiastic endorsement, Narada goes to Kim Purusha Loka, finds Hanuman, and there's Hanuman engaged in simultaneous worship of Ram and hearing the Gandharvas sing his praises and offering his own spontaneous prayers and offering his own routine prayers and offering standard prayers, and he's in total ecstasy of devotion for Ram. And when he sees Narada, he jumps up. Hanuman can jump very high. He jumps up and goes and wraps his arms around Narada's neck and just embraces him. And Narada's feeling ecstasy just being in Hanuman's company and starts glorifying him as he's done with each of the previous personalities. You are the greatest recipient of the Lord's mercy. And as soon as he speaks that way, Hanuman's mood changes. He looks down, becomes silent, and very, very humble mood, speaks about his unfortunate position, that I'm not at all dear to the Lord. When he returned to the spiritual world, he took everyone back and left me here. Of course, we discussed that the Lord's reason for leaving him was also explained. Lord Ramachandra wanted, in a compassionate way, that persons in this material world would have a chance to receive bhakti. And so he dispatched his very, very confidential servant, Hanuman, to fulfill that purpose. So at least it... He doesn't want to contradict Narada by saying, "You're wrong, I'm not a recipient of the Lord's mercy." But he's feeling very, very humble, and he wants to turn Narada's attention away from himself to others who he feels are more suitable recipients of the glorification that Narada wants to give. So he starts turning Narada's attention to the Pandavas. So the way these chapters... this chapter, Pandavas are described, and the Yadus of Dwaraka are described. It's called Priya, indicating a more confidential, in addition to service, a more confidential mood of service. And Priyatama is the even more confidential mood of service, and finally Purna, where so that goes to Dwaraka, and then within Dwaraka the most confidential amongst the residents of Dwaraka, and that's Uddhava, and then finally Vrindavan. And the last two chapters are incredible. We won't get to them but this evening. We'll get to them eventually, but the crescendo is worth the wait. Really, really wonderful composition. So Hanuman, I'll just summarize and then we'll do some reading. Hanuman says, after my Lord left me here in this material world alone, feeling just such separation from him, it's unbearable. He then appeared later in Mathura. And the pastimes that he exhibited in Mathura are unequaled to anything that I've experienced. He says, whatever mercy you may feel, Narada, that I've received, it's like a grain of sand in comparison to Mount Sumeru. Then he starts glorifying the Pandavas directly, describing, first he does this twice. First he describes the calamities, and then he describes the intimacies. And so his first description of the calamities is that the Lord arranged all those things for one reason. And that one reason is he wanted to exhibit and glorify the steadfastness of devotion, the unmotivated, unflinching devotion of the Pandavas. It didn't matter what, they were devoted steadfastly to the Supreme Lord. But to support his claim that that was the purpose, he then goes into a description of the confidential nature. In his case, Hanuman is always in the mood of Dasya Rasa. He is the servant of Lord Ramachandra. He carries him on his back. He fetches things for him. He takes care of sending messages to Sita. He brings somebody here. He takes somebody there. He's ready to do any service. But the relationship that Krishna exhibits with the Pandavas, he takes the subordinate position in so many ways and simply relishes that subordinate role as the servant, advisor, messenger, charioteer, and court attendant. He kept watch for them at night. He followed them on processions and even offered them praises and obeisances out of his affectionate concern for them. What would the Lord not do? He was seen taking combined roles as their servant, companion, and dearmost friend, and they took the same roles for him. Now he's starting to get very ecstatic here. Remember, he's with Narada Muni. Because the Lord resides constantly with the Pandavas, their capital city has become like a sacred forest where great sages perform austerities, and residing in that city awards one the same pious benefits as performing austere acts of penance. Hearing this, Narada gets really excited. He wants to get up and go to the Pandavas. So he jumps up and starts dancing and grabs his veena and plays his veena and starts singing. And seeing Narada getting so excited, Hanuman gets equally excited. He continues with his glorification. And he covers some of the same ground, but he says it in a different way. Hanuman's heart was immersed in transcendental tastes from speaking about the Pandavas, with his ecstasy raised even higher by Narada's dancing. He continued to speak about the topics. Sri Hanuman said, all the calamities that befell the Pandavas were most auspicious and desirable, because those calamities made the personality of Godhead anxious to join the Pandavas quickly. Now, I want to comment something about this. Normally we hear it the other way around, that from Queen Kunti's side, the calamities are auspicious because it brings the Supreme Lord Hanuman speaking from the Supreme Lord's position is auspicious because it excites him to want to come. Hanuman starts to get into a really far out mood, and you see the next couple of verses. And also something that I appreciated from reading this description, I'll read the purport or the commentary also, but there are incidences where great devotees do things that bring calamities, and it's very bewildering. Like when Narada, for example, when Narada goes to Kamsa and says, he goes to visit Kamsa's palace. Kamsa receives him very nicely. Grand reception, suitable for a great sage. So Narada says, "You please me very much by your reception. So now I want to do something very nice to you. I want to share with you a secret. And it'll be very meaningful for you, Kamsa, because I was just on the heavenly planets. And you know what? They're planning to kill you." It's true. They've been ordered by the Supreme Lord to take birth right here, right in Gokula, and right in your kingdom, in the Yadu dynasty. One by one, they're planning this. And Kamsa, who knows, the first child of Devaki's been born, and it was prophesied that the eighth child would kill you. But who knows? Maybe the Supreme Lord appeared as the first child. And who knows? He may have appeared somewhere else in Gokula. So Kamsa, you're very smart. A word to the wise, you can figure out what to do. I'll leave it to you to decide what to do. And see you later, Kamsa. Now why did Narada do that? He invoked atrocious behavior on the part of Kamsa. And in the commentary in the Bhagavatam, it says that Narada wanted to hasten Krishna's appearance. And then when Vasudeva gave the first child to Kamsa, because this happened after, actually, the first child was given and Kamsa melted temporarily, because Vasudeva's association was so pure that Vasudeva means situated in purity. In the association of someone who is pure, even a Kamsa became soft and said, "That's okay, Vasudeva, you keep the child. After all, it was the eighth child that was prophesied to kill me, not the first child. And you're such an honest man. I respect you so much. Go home. Take the child." And then, that's when Narada visited. After. Who knows, Kamsa? Might be the first child. Anyway, you know what to do. You're a smart man. So, Vasudeva also turned over the child, and the question is, why did he do that? What father would take the child to the hands of a murderer? So one was because he had given his word. He couldn't break his word. That was his quality. Another was that he made the promise to Kamsa initially, it was to protect Devaki. So it was an act of diplomacy to protect his wife. But the third reason given is because he was also anxious for Krishna's appearance. And one by one, the children were turned over to Kamsa. In eager anticipation. So, at least from this statement, and I'll read the purport, the commentary, by the way, is the author's own commentary. It's Sanatan Goswami's commentary, kind of summarized. He wrote the book, and he wrote the commentary to the book separately. So our BBT translators have taken their commentary from Sanatana Goswami's commentary. Whenever Krishna heard that the Pandavas were in danger, he would want to drop whatever he was doing and go at once to help them. And since the Pandavas' misfortune was auspicious, how much more auspicious was their good fortune? Krishna helped the brothers kill Jarasandha. And then after that, he washed the feet of everyone at Yudhisthira's Rajasuya sacrifice. In other words, he just wanted to serve the Pandavas and glorify the Pandavas. He could have killed Jarasandha, but he wanted them to do it. And then he wanted Yudhisthira to be honored, and for Yudhisthira's Rajasuya Yagya to be honored, he sat and bathed everybody's feet that came to honor Yudhisthira. So, who can adequately describe the glory of the Pandavas' loving exchanges with Krishna? Before, Hanuman had said that the Pandavas' troubles were not real, that they were only a show arranged by Krishna to advertise the Pandavas' steadfastness and other saintly qualities. Now, Hanuman is speaking differently. Even taking for granted that the calamities were real, as they seemed to ordinary eyes, these troubles brought the Pandavas the greatest good fortune. The troubles themselves were auspicious. Why? Because it inspired Krishna to act in very intimate, confidential, loving ways. Therefore, the calamities were auspicious in themselves. What to speak of the good fortune that came their way. The Hanuman goes on. He goes on speaking. He has become so ecstatic in glorification of the Pandavas. He speaks as if they're there. He starts addressing them and instructing them directly. O Pandavas, pure love has subdued you, ignoring discrimination and etiquette. You engage my Lord as your messenger and charioteer. For Hanuman, that's unthinkable. Oh, you Pandavas must know some transcendental herb or mantra that can enchant the most powerful enchanter. He becomes so ecstatic. He starts with Narada, jumping up in the air. And again, Hanuman can jump very high. So he jumps higher and higher and higher, and Narada's jumping with him higher and higher. They become so ecstatic. Narada grabs him by the arm. Hanuman's arm's big. Grabs him by the arm and says, "Let's go. Let's go to Dwarka." He gets a little confused. "Let's go to Dwarka and see the Pandavas." Now, there's some explanation that comes up ahead somewhere that explains that at the time it'll come up later, I'm sorry. Hanuman continues to speak. O master of all masters. So he's now speaking to Krishna. Before it was he was speaking about the Pandavas. Then he was speaking to the Pandavas. Now he's speaking to Krishna. Not Ramchandra, he's speaking to Krishna. O master of all masters, you are conquered by your great affectionate concern for your devotees. This is the way you act to attract the hearts of your servants. It is my great fortune that Pritha's middle son, Bhimasen, is also my dear younger brother. How is that? How is Hanuman, a monkey, having a younger brother as Bhimasen, the same father? So then he starts appreciating Kunti. So the Yudhisthira and Arjun and Bhima and Nakula and Sahadev. So, but it's starting with Karna. So then he starts appreciating Lord Krishna by acts of friendship, like giving up his sister in marriage to the Pandavas. To the Pandava Arjuna, showed the Pandava Arjuna full mercy, and that Arjuna bears my image on the treasured flag of his chariot. So something that we read earlier is that Hanuman was so big that wherever he was, you could see Hanuman before you could see anything else. So wherever you saw Hanuman, you know Ramchandra was there. And he had a big white tail. So he would hold his tail over Ramchandra like a big white umbrella. So he's so proud that Arjuna, who's so favored by Krishna, that Krishna gave his own sister. And in the purport is explaining that Subhadra is a manifestation of the Lord's own internal potency, not only his sister. And he entrusted his internal potency to be the wife of Arjuna. So how fortunate I am to be on the flag of Arjuna's chariot. I'm honored to be in that position. Without the unconditional mercy of the Lord's most beloved friends, loving service by a devotee can never succeed or bear fruit. Now this is a very simple statement, but it's a critical understanding in our Gaudiya Vaishnava teaching. Certainly the Goswamis were examples of that. Teachings of the Goswamis and the followers of the Goswamis, all those who are followers of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, understand this point and teach this point, and it's everywhere in their conduct, in their writings, in their songs, that in order to approach Krishna and effectively come to the stage of awakening, our deeper moods of bhakti, we require the mercy of those who are in that position. So prayers to Vaishnava Thakur, prayers to elevated devotees, when practically the whole mood when going to a place of pilgrimage, Vrindavan in particular, but any place of pilgrimage, is offering prayers to the Dham and offering prayers to the devotees who resided in the Dham, that they bestow their blessings, that those persons, those of us who frequent those places, that their blessings are bestowed upon us so that we can come to that stage of devotion to relish and reside there eternally, serve Krishna eternally. This mood of invoking the descending mercy of elevated personality. So this teaching of the Goswamis is inserted here by having Hanuman say it after glorifying in an ecstatic way the Pandavas. I'll read it again. Without the unconditional mercy of the Lord's most beloved friends, loving service by a devotee can never succeed or bear fruit. Therefore, Narada, let's go. Let's go to the Pandavas right now And he gets up and starts to go with Narada, and Narada's ready to go. And then he stops. And again, his mood changes. He looks down at the ground and says, better that you go alone. Because that's a very, very exalted place, and I'm just a monkey. And as you know, monkeys do bad things sometimes. And even your father, such an exalted person as your father, the father of the grandfather, the grandsire of the universe, and the originator of the Vedas, even he made a defense when he went and associated with Krishna. What to speak of me? I'm just a monkey. I better stay here. I'll just stay here. And then his whole demeanor changes. I'll just stay here in Kimpurusha Loka and wait for the Lord. Maybe one day he'll call me. Maybe one day he'll have even a little service for me to do. And I want to be ready for him. So there's some very, very wonderful prayers that he recites. I'll just read them. I simply feel more attracted to the Supreme Lord in his eternal identity as Sri Raghunath, the son of Dasarath, and the joy of Mother Kausalya. His heart, always tender with natural, unaffected compassion, he is spontaneously attracted to loving exchanges with his devotees, who are free from any tinge of duplicity. He demonstrates how to follow properly the religious duties of a civilized people, and he upholds the strict vows of having only one wife. In the shyness of innate humility, his face always looks downward, his eyes fixed on the ground. His exalted character is pleasing to all. He stands with bow in hand, the king of kings, the hero of the city of Ayodhya, served by Sita and Lakshman, with Bharat as his elder brother. He rules the race of monkeys as the dear friend of Sugriva, and gives shelter to Vibhishan. By my hearing the pastimes of Krishna, the unlimited loving attraction I feel toward my own master has just increased. Therefore, I think I will stay here, constantly seeing him in this form and drinking the immortal nectar of his pastimes. And when the Lord may sometimes call me for some purpose, by his great mercy, he might allow me the transcendental happiness of serving him. Or, inspired by affection for me, the Lord may call me just to show me the beautiful form that I love more than my own life. Now, Sanatana Goswami narrates a little story here to indicate very wonderfully the mood of Hanuman. I don't know the reference other than Sanatana Goswami narrated the story in the purport. He tells the story of Krishna once being with Garuda in Dwaraka, and to glorify Hanuman, he said, Garuda, could you please go and let Hanuman know that I would like to see him. So, yes, sir. Garuda flies away and finds Hanuman. He lets him know Krishna would like to see you at once. So Hanuman just ignores Garuda, doesn't even pay attention to him. So Garuda becomes angry. The Lord wants to see you, so I'm just going to take you. And he starts to tries to pick up Hanuman And Hanuman just flips his tail and knocks Garuda flying through the air, all the way to Dwarka, and it comes in for a crash landing in front of Vishnu. And Garuda narrates what happened, and Krishna smiles and says, go back again and tell him that Lord Raghunath wants to see him. Go ahead. So in the story, in the narration, he transforms himself into Ramachandra and requests Balaram to transform himself into Lakshman. And he requests Satyabhama to transform herself into Sita, but she can't manage to do it. So then he goes to Rukmini and asks her to, and so she does. So as soon as Garuda delivers the message that Lord Raghunath would like to see him, he gets ready to put Hanuman on his back and carry him. But before he can even position himself, Hanuman leaps in the air and is gone on his way to Dwarka and arrives, boom, right in front of Sita, Ram and Lakshman. So this was to instruct Garuda about the glories of Hanuman's exclusive devotion to Lord Ram. So now he's appreciating the wonder, the wonderful qualities, the special intimacy that relationships with Krishna afford with his intimate devotees. But nonetheless, his Lord is the Ramachandra. I must be ready to present myself before him without delay, whenever he might call. But now, you, please go visit the Pandavas at their home and see the Supreme Absolute Truth in his appearance like a human being. Hanuman continues, Lord Krishna is fully satisfied in himself. Even great sages cannot perceive him in their hearts or describe him with their words. He is the supreme enchanter because his wonderful pastimes are the source of endless attraction. Please, do not allow your intelligence to become shrouded by the offensive idea that you and I are staunch celibates in the Pandavas, mere householders, distracted by political affairs. These Pandavas, now he glorifies them, they never desire anything material, because they constantly serve Lord Krishna's lotus feet. And, indeed, their own lotus feet are worshipped by the spiritual masters of the Paramahansas. The eldest of these brothers rules the state out of love for the personality of Godhead. Thus, his kingdom is rich in all sorts of assets rarely enjoyed even by the demigods. And in Sanatana Goswami's long commentary, one of the things he mentions is, in the Vedic system, a king would enjoy 1/6 of the property of his citizens for his kingdom and for his own personal use. He would also enjoy 1/6 of their karma. But for a person like Yudhisthira Maharaj, because he was so pious, his citizens were so pious, that he enjoyed 1/6 of their piety. And because he was, and his citizens were so pious, the kingdom was unlimitedly bountiful, even superseding that of the demigods, and rivaling that of Vaikuntha. And yet, once again, he's being glorified here by Hanuman. No attraction to any of it. And this is one of the consistent glorifications of the residents of Vaikuntha, or the Vaikuntha mood, like with Maharaj Ambarish. We discussed the glories of Maharaj Ambarish not so long ago. So he also had unlimited opulence and saw it as no more important than a piece of stone on the street. and yet he utilized it all in the Lord's service, not one tinge or bit of attraction to enjoy those things. So Pandavas are being glorified that way also. Then another very interesting explanation is being presented, that he engaged in the Rajasuya and Ashvamedha yagyas. So those, normally those yagyas are done for material prosperity. It's part of Karmakanda procedures. And Maharaj Yudhisthira did those things. But why did he do those things? He did those things to glorify the Supreme Lord. And in so doing, because he was completely detached, much like we heard in the very, very beginning, the Brahmana at the Dasashvamedha Ghat, he performed his Abhishek and made Anukut offering and distributed all the jewels and valuables and cloth and food for the prasadam and everything to everybody, including all the living entities, and then came back before the deity with folded hands and said, whatever piety may have accrued from this activity, I offer it all unto you. So, in a similar manner, the description is here that Maharaj Yudhisthira's engagement in sacrificial rituals only increased his exclusive devotion to Krishna. By performing the Rajasuya and Ashvamedha sacrifices, Yudhisthira earned the privilege to enter Vaikuntha, included automatically in this privilege was the right to visit the heavenly planets of Indra and every other planet. So though he was a resident of Earth, everything that he did, including the Kurukshetra battle, and everything that he did was simply for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord, including these worldly sacrifices. His pure fame is known throughout the three worlds. His faultless possessions evoke the envy of the gods. This king achieved all opulences by Krishna's mercy and has offered it all to Krishna. He never had any power to please himself. Since his heart always burns in the fire of love for Krishna, the garlands, fine ornaments, and sandalwood pulp adorning him attract him no more than they would attract a man afflicted by the fire of hunger. In other words, someone who's hungry, offer them a garland. His hankering for association with Krishna in loving service dispelled any attraction for any worldly opulence. Just see, his superlative queen is none other than Srimati Draupadi, and his brothers are such men as the blessed Bhimasen and Arjuna. They are dear to him not because of bodily ties or because they help each other reach the goals of material life, but because of their loving bond with the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. But what can a forest monkey like me say about the Pandavas? Your lordship already knows much more than I about their glories. So that ends the chapter. And I'm going to read a little bit more where Narada becomes very excited. He wants to go with Hanuman, but Hanuman won't go. So he goes alone. And dancing and dancing and dancing. He's visited the Pandavas many times before, but now he's coming in a very, very special mood. Again, just wanting to glorify them. So when he reaches the place in Hastinapur, let me see where that is. There's some detail that explains that during the reign of Madhu, There's some history. Maybe I'll be able to find it later. There's some history of the connection between Mathura and Dwarka. I was puzzled by this. At one point, and I was discussing this with a couple of other sannyasis, the first time that Krishna met Uddhava was when Krishna had gone back from Vrindavan to Mathura. He defeated Chanura and Mushtaka. He defeated Kamsa, and he was again in the care of Vasudeva and Devaki. Vasudeva and Devaki enrolled him in the school of Sandipani Muni, and he graduated really quickly. And then there was this concern about Jarasandha, and Nanda Maharaj was still there. So he had sent Nanda Maharaj to go back to Vrindavan, telling him, very soon I'll join you. There's a few other things I have to take care of here in Mathura. So tell everybody, they must be in great anxiety. And this is a very wonderful topic amongst our acharyas. How is it possible for Narada, for Nanda Maharaj, to leave Krishna? Even Krishna ordered him. How could he do it? How could he leave Krishna? But under the influence of Yoga Maya, Krishna somehow convinced him. So in the Krishna book, it says that Uddhava and Krishna were cousins, something like that, and they hadn't met before because Krishna was born in Mathura and at birth sent to Gokul and lived in Vrindavan and then had just returned back to Mathura. He had never met Uddhava. And it says that Uddhava came from Dwarka, but Dwarka hadn't even been built yet, at least the Dwarka Palace. That came later. So I was wondering, what was Uddhava doing? So some member of the Yadu clan, so it turns out that it was one empire. So it's explained in Sanatana Goswami's commentary, or one kingdom, or whatever you call it, that stretched from Mathura to now city of Dwarka, not just the palace that was built in the ocean by Krishna, or under Krishna's direction. There was this standing, so it was like both places were under one kingdom. So when it's described, when Narada wants to go see the Pandavas, he starts talking about going to Dwarka, although they're in Hastinapur. He just kind of gets, he's so ecstatic, he gets a little confused. But he knows how to find the Pandavas. He went to Hastinapur. When he reaches Hastinapur, the Pandavas are having a conference, a little meeting, and they're making a plan how to get Krishna to come to Hastinapur. And their first plan is, like they did with the Rajasuya Yajna, they planned a big Yajna and they wanted Krishna to be the guest of honor. So they figured maybe we could have another Ashvamedha Yajna, and then we invite Krishna to be the guest of honor. Maybe we can get him to come. But then they consider, no, that'll take too long. It takes a long time to plan out a big Yajna. Maybe we'll, what's another good idea? Another good idea is we can have a calamity. We can say that we're being attacked and we need you to come and protect us because there's an attack. But no, that's not going to work because Krishna knows that he killed all the demons already, so that's not going to work. Mm-hmm. So they're planning how to bring Krishna, because they know what will bring Krishna for Krishna to glorify them, because Krishna likes to do that, likes to glorify his devotees, or when his devotees are put into difficulty, Krishna will come for that purpose too. So they're meeting like this, making a plan, and Narada arrives. And Narada arrives practically like in such an ecstatic mood They don't know if he's intoxicated or what's happening. They've never seen him carrying on like this. So immediately they go and gather, they stop what they're doing, and they gather paraphernalia to receive him. And as they assemble all the paraphernalia, Narada grabs all the paraphernalia and starts to worship them. And they try to stop, they can't have Narada worshiping them, but Narada's insisting in his mood that he's going to worship the Pandavas. And he went on chanting, and because he's in an ecstatic mood and he's a chanter, he's a kirtan man. So he's chanting their glories. On and on and on. So I'm going to skip some part of it. It's a lot of philosophical explanation of the position of the Supreme Lord in relation to this world, in relation to his devotees, in a very general way. Very deep philosophy. But then he switches from the philosophy part to say, really, his reason for coming here is, I've come because you are the greatest recipients of the mercy of the Supreme Lord. That's his mantra. And then he gives his reasons. And the reason that he starts with, there's a theme. And the theme is that previously, all the places that he's been, and the devotees who he's been with, and the Lord that they are worshipping, this particular form of Lord Krishna that is intimately connected with the Pandavas, is very special. And so the first speciality is that, and it goes on for about six verses, is how Krishna uniquely has given liberation to so many personalities with this particular incarnation. So that's the theme, and then he expands on the theme. Kalanemi, Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha, Ravana, Kumbhakarna, and others were killed by the Supreme Lord, but none of them received liberation. And pure devotional service was given to no one but Prahlad, who received it from the incarnation of Sri Nrisimha. Here's the commentary. Kalanemi was killed by the Lord of Vaikuntha during a battle between the demigods and demons. Hiranyaksha was killed by Lord Varaha. Hiranyakashipu was killed by Lord Nrisimha. And the two brothers, Ravana and Kumbhakarna, by Lord Ramachandra. Other daityas and rakshasas, including relatives of the demons mentioned in these verses, also met death at the hands of the Supreme Lord. Nonetheless, we know that upon being killed by the Lord, none of them attained liberation, since history records that they all took birth again. And this is in detail described in one purport in Chaitanya Charitamrita and Adi Lila, Chapter 3, I think it is, like a 3 or 4 page purport where this is elaborated upon. Only in the pastimes of Sri Krishna did many demons obtain liberation. Lord Vishnu's avatars rarely give liberation, but they in Laghu Bhagavatamrita, the position, the identifying the position of Krishna as the Supreme Lord is described. It's, in other words, it's Sambandhagyan. And here, the description of Krishna's glories, Brihat Bhagavatamrita, is expanded. So in Laghu Bhagavatamrita, this is confirmed that rarely does Lord Vishnu give liberation. The Puranas describe that only one case, the Puranas describe only one case in which pure devotional service was granted, that is when Lord Nrisimha blessed Prahlad. that event when Prahlad was standing before the Supreme, he came before the Supreme Lord and offered his obeisances. And then the Lord, while he was offering his obeisances, lying prostrated before him, he picked him up with his hands and placed his hand on his head, his paw on his head. And great ecstasy filled Prahlad. And then he began composing his wonderful prayers. And then Sanatana Goswami's commentary says that even with that pure devotion, at least Prahlad's own testimony is given here in Brihad Bhagavatamrita that it was still mixed with speculative knowledge, although it certainly doesn't seem to be so, because he heard from Narada. So Narada goes on, he's speaking to the Pandavas. Later, the incarnation Lord Raghunath bestowed pure devotion upon a few, namely Guha, Hanuman, Jambavan, Vibhishan, Dasarath, and the blessed Sugriva. But in relation to those devotees, we never hear of prema, the utmost stage of pure devotion. In the commentary, some of the participants in Lord Ramchandra's leelas were not finite living entities. Lord Ram's three brothers were incarnations of the masters of Vaikuntha, Sankarshan, Pradumna, and Aniruddha. The Lord's wife, Sita Devi, was directly the goddess Lakshmi. These infallible persons need not rise to the level of love of God, because they are situated on that level eternally. But some of Lord Ramchandra's servants, who are jivas, his janas, or personal dependents, reaped from his association the benefit of pure bhakti. Love of God is pure when freed from the material motives of karma and gyan. Lord Devaki Nandana, in his appearance as the Lord, Lord Devaki Nandana, in his appearance as the Lord of the Raghus, granted such bhakti to only a few of his devotees. Guha, a king of the Nishadas, became a friend of Lord Ramchandra's. Anyway, a little more. Here Narada says that even Dasarath obtained bhakti from Lord Ram. Narada qualifies his statement in this way to answer a potential doubt that Dasarath was an unfortunate person. After all, Dasarath had been cursed by a brahmana to suffer separation from his son, and that separation led to his dying untimely in lamentation. Still, he was blessed with pure bhakti by virtue of his intense attachment to his son Ram. His apparent suffering is properly understood to be an ecstatic symptom of transcendental separation from the personality of Godhead. So now he goes back to speaking about Krishna. But now so many persons have been granted liberation, made devotees, and filled with pure prema, all by your maternal uncle. Commentary. Even persons who came into casual contact with Krishna gained liberation and pure devotion. What to speak of the Pandavas, who lived with Krishna constantly as his intimate friends? The Pandavas should not imagine themselves bereft of these benefits. Then he goes on, Narada. By the power of his glory, demons fit for hell became immortal, and after being slain by him, or by such companions as Arjuna. So he quotes a verse from the, a pair of verses from the second canto, giving the names of some of the personalities who were killed by Krishna or by Balaram or by his devotees like Arjuna. And the verse says, all such demons attained either the impersonal Brahma Jyoti or the Lord's personal abode in the Vaikuntha planets. So sometimes that question is raised, what happened? Like on the Kurukshetra battle, all the persons who were killed, what happened? Here's the verse that's answering that question. Scriptural reference. They either attained the Brahmajyoti or the Lord's own abode. Like in the case of Putana, achieved Goloka Vrindavan. The commentary continues, Lord Balaram killed Denuka, Dvidvida, Balvala, and others. Pradumna killed Shambhara. Muchukunda killed Yavanaraj, and Bhima, Arjuna, and other devotees killed enemies like the king of Kamboja. But actually, Krishna himself killed all these demons. Krishna simply acted through the agency of his devotees to let them share in the glories of his acts. So just going to cover a few more verses and end. The next point he makes is that there are great sages, Vishvamitra Muni, Vashishta Muni, Gotama Muni. They're very prominent persons in the Lord's other leelas, but they didn't become pure devotees. But when they associated with Lord Krishna, there's a reference from the pilgrimage to Kurukshetra, where they engaged in taking bath at the time of the solar eclipse, and Vashishta was also there, and Gotama, and Vishvamitra, and they came before the Supreme Lord and offered some prayer. So here's the prayer, chapter 84 from the 10th canto. Today we have directly seen your feet, the source of the holy Ganges, which washes away volumes of sins. Perfected yogis can at best meditate upon your feet within their hearts. But only those who render you wholehearted devotional service and in this way vanquish the soul's covering, the material mind, can attain you as their final destination. Therefore, kindly show mercy to us, your devotees. And Sanatana Goswami quotes Sridhar Swami's commentary on that verse. Sridhar Swami explains that the sages considered their audience with Krishna the ultimate reward for their accumulated religious activities. Aware of their exceptional good fortune, they dared to ask Krishna for the favor of pure devotional service. In case Krishna might try to dissuade them, saying, why do you need devotional service? Just continue performing austerities as you have. They reminded Krishna that in the past, the coverings of the gross and subtle bodies were transcended only by his pure devotees, not by impersonal ascetics. So, Narada is glorifying this particular unique qualification of the form of Krishna, that the beauty of Krishna and the qualities of Krishna and the merciful nature of Krishna brought these sages to the stage of devotional service, pure devotional service. Even immobile creatures and species covered by the mode of ignorance, trees, creepers, and so on, have been raised to the consciousness of pure goodness. Now those trees and creepers are raining down a nectar sap of Krishna prema. So when Krishna was in the forest of Vrindavan, just by his coming in the vicinity of the trees, they would be filled with Krishna prema and ooze sap and honey, exhibiting their ecstatic love for Krishna and their attraction for him. And it quotes some verses from the Bhagavatam, and there's zillions of such quotes from the writings of the Goswamis indicating the same thing. O Krishna's brothers, the Pandavas, how can the infinite wonders of his bodily beauty, his effulgence and his charm be properly described? Features so attractive have never been seen in anyone else. Those unprecedented attractive features of Krishna leave one struck with amazement. So also do his pastimes, his qualities, his pure love, his glorious virtues, and the places where he sports. I think that he has not descended in his own original form. I think had he not descended in his own original form, the world would never have come, have never have known his true identity as the personality of Godhead. Now his identity as God has been shown, for he has appeared in all his splendor, adorned with his unique glories and the varied wonders of his charming sweetness. We speak of Krishna's kindness, but even the punishments he metes out are worthy of praise. To this, there have been many earlier witnesses, including Kamsa, Kaliya, Putana, and Bali. And I'm going to read part of this purport. It's a three-page purport glorifying Krishna's reciprocation with the demons. I'm not going to read the whole thing, and that concludes our discussion. Commentary. While Kamsa was ruling Mathura, the dread of being killed by Krishna tormented him constantly. But as a side effect of this involuntary meditation, Kamsa became completely Krishna conscious. Shukadeva Goswami describes it. 10th canto, chapter 2. While sitting on his throne or in his sitting room, while lying on his bed, and indeed while situated anywhere, and while eating, sleeping, walking, or drinking, Kamsa saw only his enemy, the Supreme Lord, Rishikesha. In other words, by thinking of this all-pervading enemy, Kamsa became unfavorably Krishna conscious. At the time of Kamsa's death, Krishna dragged him from his platform in the arena and jumped on his chest. Thus Kamsa left his body. He was able to feel Krishna's foot on his chest and see Krishna's blessed face. After Kamsa's death, Krishna arranged a royal funeral, attended by the Yadu princes, the cowherds of Braja, and Lord Krishna himself. Like a dear friend of the family, Krishna further consoled Kamsa's widows and granted the vacant throne to Kamsa's father, Ugrasena. To see the mercy of Krishna, even with Kamsa. Being punished by Krishna also spiritually benefited many allies of Kamsa, including the wrestlers of Mathura and kings like Jarasandha. Only the most malevolent enemies of the Lord, namely Shishupal and Dantavakra, failed to obtain his full mercy during their lives. These two demons displeased Krishna by committing offenses against Brahmanas. But because the demons were actually his eternal servants in disguise, in the end they also received his mercy. Opponents like the wrestlers Chanura and Mushtika were less culpable. Fighting against Krishna under Kamsa's orders, they had become infected by Kamsa's envious spirit. Still, the wrestlers were allowed to enjoy the favor of being embraced by Krishna during combat. Just like the cowherd boys of Braja in their mock fights with Krishna, Krishna also honored the wrestlers by conducting their funerals. And the verse from the Bhagavatam says he did that. Lord Balaram repeatedly captured Jarasandha in combat, but each time he released him just to glorify Jarasandha's prowess. Krishna, Balaram, and their friends paid a personal visit to Jarasandha's palace to forever establish his reputation as a great follower of Brahminical culture. Which is true. They came disguised as Brahmanas and requested charity as Brahmanas. And he knew these aren't Brahmanas, but they're in disguise as Brahmanas, so I should give them charity. Whatever they want. You want my kingdom? You can have my kingdom. To glorify his dedication to Brahminical culture. Pondraka and other enemies of the Lord received similar merciful treatment in text 21 of this chapter. By the word Atmana Marita, Narada has implied that they all attained liberation. Narada further confirmed this is a conversation with Krishna's father Vasudev. Inimical kings like Shishupal, Pondraka, and Shalva were always thinking about Lord Krishna Even while lying down, sitting, or engaged in other activities, they enviously meditated upon the bodily movements of the Lord, his sporting pastimes, his loving glances upon his devotees, and other attractive features displayed by the Lord. Being thus always absorbed in Krishna, they achieve spiritual liberation in the Lord's own abode. What then can be said of the benedictions offered to those who are constantly fixing their minds on Lord Krishna in a favorable, loving mood? I'll read a little bit more, long purport. Demons who invaded Krishna's sacred land of Gokula obtained from Krishna even greater mercy than the kings who opposed him in Mathura and Dwaraka. Kaliya was blessed with the touch of Krishna's limbs more thoroughly than the wrestlers in Kamsa's arena. While Krishna enthusiastically danced on Kaliya's heads, the serpent received Vrindavan dust directly from Krishna's feet, a benefit that Kaliya's wives praised in ecstasy. Thus Kaliya received special mercy, for Krishna used each one of Kaliya's heads as a dancing stage. Krishna also accepted worship and prayers from Kaliya, issued him personal orders, and granted him the island of Ramanaka, where he could live free from fear from his arch-enemy Garuda. Indeed, by leaving the mark of Sudarshan disc on Kaliya's head, Krishna arranged for Kaliya to gain Garuda's friendship and respect. Krishna allowed Putana to enter Goloka, appearing among the cowherds dressed as a first-class lady. At the beginning of Shukadeva Goswami's description of Putana's encounter with Krishna, we are told, quote, "My dear king, whenever people in any position perform their occupational duties of devotional service by chanting and hearing, there cannot be any danger from bad elements. Therefore, there was no need for anxiety about Gokula while the Supreme Personality of Godhead was personally present." In other words, the witch Putana posed no threat to the inhabitants of Gokula. Krishna allowed her to enter simply to give her his mercy. Krishna placed his lotus feet, the object of Lord Brahma's meditation, on Putana's lap and allowed her to caress him. By this, Mother Jasoda and Rohini were greatly astonished. Thanks to having the opportunity to treat Krishna as her infant, Putana became his mother eternally, as several authorities in Srimad Bhagavatam affirm. I'm going to quote some of the authorities saying that. Uddhava says it, Brahma says it, Shukadeva Goswami says it. Even Putana's dead body, restored to the horrible form of a witch, was sanctified as Krishna's playground. And when her corpse was burned, it gave off a fragrance like precious aguru, which spread in all directions. Here we go. We're almost done.
I'm always late.
You're right on time. We're almost done. Other persons who came to Gokula also obtained special mercy from Krishna. The sons of Kuvera. Anyway, it goes on. Another two pages. The mercy of... So this is the summary. The mercy of Krishna's punishment was evident not only when he appeared in his original form in Gokula, but also in many of his incarnations. As Sri Vamana, for example, when the Lord arrested Bali, Daityaraj, and humiliated him, the Lord declared to the world the strength of Bali's sober determination. Then, having taken away from him the throne of heaven, Lord Vamana gave him, in exchange, the greater kingdom of Sutala Loka with all its riches. The Lord took up the post of the doorkeeper at Bali's palace and defended the palace gates from the intrusion of Ravana. And when Durvas begged Lord Vamana to leave Bali for some time to defend Durvas against the demon Kusha, Lord Vamana refused to do so without Bali's permission. In yet other incarnations, the personality of God had killed demons like Madhu, Kaitava, and Kalanemi, who had enjoyed the pleasure of opposing the Lord in battle. They received great mercy from him. These histories are recounted in various Puranas. The mercy shown by Sri Krishna through his incarnations is a natural reflection of the supreme mercy he displays in his original form. The source of incarnations is glorified by the glories of each of his expansions. In the final text, Maharaj Parikshit has been narrating this exchange between Narada and the Pandavas. Parikshit said, while singing enthusiastically in this way, Narada the sage instructed his own tongue, which was greedy to chant the glories of Lord Madhava, "Oh, you are too busy talking about the greatness of our master." To stop his tongue, he then seized it with his teeth. But that didn't work, so he grabbed it with his hand and instructed his tongue, "Calm down." But it didn't work. He had to go on glorifying Krishna some more. So, next time we'll continue with further glorification. Narada speaking to the Pandavas, and then the Pandavas one by one start to reply with denying everything that he said and stating their own inadequacies. And anyway, there's some interest in Bhima pulls a reversal. Mm-hmm. Says you can't trust Krishna, he's too tricky. Indicating that Bhima had some kind of very, very confidential, intimate relationship with Krishna, otherwise he wouldn't speak that way. Anyway, stay tuned for the rest of chapter 5. The dearness of Krishna's Pandava devotees. So any discussion?
Is that
questions?
Gopi Purana Das?
Yeah. It's at the printer. The last thing, this was about a month ago, they got the foreword by Professor O'Connell from Toronto. And
Case of the Birth. Doing the editing, Case of the Birth.
There's a team of four people. So after they got Joseph O'Connell's foreword, they sent it to the, because it's all done.
Oh.
So it's at the printer. And maybe by the Christmas marathon we'll have copies of it to read and distribute.
What's the name of the book?
Brihat Bhagavatamrita. Sri Brihat Bhagavatamrita, so by Sanatana Goswami, and translated by our BBT, Gopi Puranadana, and edited by Jayadvaita Swami and Keshava Bharati and a few others. What starts to happen after he leaves the Pandavas? It's very exciting. Yes.
You know, some of these demons, you know, they got the blessing of the Lord. How do they do that? How do they get that? The fact that, you know, they are demons, they have done all kinds of stuff. What is it that, is it they have done something that they got the blessing of the Lord, they got liberation? So, what's the logic behind that?
Well, there's different situations for each personality. Shishupal and Dantavakra, they got the mercy because they were previously Jayan Vijay in Vaikuntha, but that's very unusual. Um, Kamsa in his previous life was Kalanemi, who was the son of Hiranyakashipu, as was Prahlad. So he was cursed. Or his sons were cursed that they would be killed by their own father.
Grandsons.
His sons, Kalanemi's sons, in their next birth, would be killed by their own father. So Kamsa killed those six children of Devaki who were those same sons. And it goes back to a previous birth where those six sons were sons of Marichi, who ridiculed Lord Brahma, and they were cursed by Lord Brahma to take. So it gets an intricate series of things, and it's case by case basis. But for the most part, the Bhaktisiddhanta describes in this way that our acharyas, the Lord's manifestation, when he appears in this world with scheduled incarnations, it's like the rising of the sun, that mercy is distributed freely to everyone, devotee and non-devotee alike. And those that are non-devotee, those that are opposed to the supremacy of the Supreme Lord, get purification because he's the Supreme Lord. They don't get love for the Supreme Lord. They don't get that kind of mercy, but they get relieved of their sins by that fixation. Yes.
Maharaj, you talked about how incarnations of Lord Vishnu, they sell that pure, pure devotion. And you said how Raghunath gave that to Sri devotees, but we never hear of prema in these people.
That was the verse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and then you said because they're constantly with the Lord. So, but if they are with the Lord, they must have that love of God.
Yeah, they have this pure devotion for the Supreme Lord, but what's indicated here is this special kind of intimacy as we find with the Pandavas, or in turn the Yadavas, and in turn the residents of Vrindavan. That kind of love, that kind of spiritual attainment, a very confidential, as these last three chapters, Priya, Priyatama, and Purna, that we don't find. It's more in a reverential mood, and Krishna is the distributor of this more intimate kind of exchange. That's the understanding that I have for that statement. Very confidential kind of loving exchange Krishna offers alone, and that's one of the. We find in Nectar of Devotion that there are 64 qualities that Krishna has, and 60 of those 64 qualities Lord Narayan, or the Lord of Vaikuntha, also has. But one of those four qualities that Lord Krishna has that Lord Narayan doesn't have the same is very, very intimate, confidential, loving relations with his devotees. In that sense, yes.
You also said how several personalities they were working in a way to hasten the appearance of the Lord, but the Lord's appearance is already.
I think either answer, depending upon the stage of regulative bhakti, one would say he would have appeared anyway. from the spontaneous or bhava bhakti point of view, they hastened. They know that the Lord would come to relieve the devotee from danger, so they created a situation of danger to hasten what was going to happen. And it's out of that love that they had, as well as the circumstance of danger for the devotee, that it hastened. And I'll read again what the statement says. This is coming from the bhava position, as far as I can understand. Here it is. Sri Hanuman said, "All the calamities that befell the Pandavas were most auspicious and desirable, because those calamities made the Supreme Personality of Godhead anxious." Bhava. To join the Pandavas quickly. In the commentary, before Hanuman had said that the Pandavas' troubles were not real, they were just a show arranged by Krishna to advertise the Pandavas' steadfastness and other saintly qualities. Now, Hanuman speaks differently. Yeah, so they're hastening. He has a question, or he's just getting a translation?
Okay. I got a question too.
Okay.
What's the difference between religion and spirituality?
Between religion and spirituality.
And the kind of, righteous man be atheist?
Okay. I know what Bhaktisiddhanta says. The terms are very similar. I've heard them. My sense of their distinction is that righteous or religious means following those codes that elevate one to the position of goodness. Following the laws of God, the commandments of God of how to conduct your life in this world. Conduct your life as a good person. That's righteous or religious. And spiritual is beyond this world, on the platform of the soul. The soul's connection with the Supreme in an eternal relationship of loving service. That's spiritual. It's the difference between, are you familiar with Bhagavad Gita enough to know the difference between the modes of nature, goodness, passion, ignorance, and in the spiritual world there's pure goodness or shuddha, sattva. So sattva is the mode of goodness where there's some mixture of passion and ignorance, but predominantly is goodness. Right? And shuddha, as there's no passion, no ignorance, it's pure, entirely transcendental. That's spiritual. and religious is elevating one to the position of goodness within the modes of nature. That's not a hard and fast rule to make that distinction, but it's a simple distinction for use of those terminologies. There's correlation, but there's some distinction. And the second question is, can a righteous person be an atheist? That's called, if you have the idea of righteous as being situated in the mode of goodness, Bhaktisiddhanta calls that atheistic moralism, where one, there's no mention of God, but one tries to be virtuous. You try to do good because just in principle you should do good. You should try not to hurt because in principle you should not hurt. God's not in the picture. Just be moral, be ethical, be virtuous, be righteous. And God can exist or not exist, it's irrelevant. Yeah, there are ideologies like that. And then it becomes a question whether one considers that to be righteous or not. There's no support for it, because the support is God. So it's something better than no consideration of righteousness as an atheist. An unruly atheist is more dangerous than an ethical atheist. But an ethical atheist can also be dangerous, because for a couple of reasons, innocent people can be dissuaded from the path leading to God by that message of atheistic moralism, which leads them to a position of no support. And then part two is, because there is no support, like that, the whole situation can shift. Push my button and watch me become unethical. Everyone has a threshold of when they stop being ethical and when they start being unethical. And if there's no standard, another thing is that standards will always change, because God establishes what is dharma or what is theistic conduct. If you have God out of the picture, what's today's theistic conduct or today's immoral conduct is tomorrow's theistic conduct. Take, you know, abortion, or, you know, thou shalt not kill becomes thou shalt not murder.
Man to man marriages.
Yeah. So many things. So many things that today is unthinkable, tomorrow is moral. Because there's no standard. And also, if there's enough antagonism, there goes my morality, and here comes immorality. So it's deceptive morality. Deception always has a great quantum of danger in it. It appears to be like the real thing, but it's not. Like the real thing. It looks like the real thing, but it's not. It's dangerous. It's better than unruly atheism. And in the name of God, sinful activity saying God approves it, as we've just experienced in our recent world events. Allah's will has been done. That's very dangerous also. Yeah.
Maharaj, I did not understand one piece where Hanuman is glorifying Lord Krishna.
Mm.
And then he says, but I will worship Lord Ramchandra in that form where he has one wife.
Yeah.
He specifically mentions one wife. I'm sure he knows Lord Krishna has so many wives.
Yeah. Well, it's a prayer where he's in the mood of Ram Bhakta. And that's one of the glories of Ram in that Leela, as the ideal king. Although an ideal king, a king may have many wives for theistic conduct of worldly people, as in the role of a worldly king, a person that is not God. But so Krishna's Leela is different. Krishna is very clearly God, and Ram's Leela is the ideal king of this world, although the king of this world may have many queens, one queen. So he sees the distinction. His fidelity is with Ram. Yeah?
Can you speak in a nutshell about the second part, how to invoke the mercy of those who receive it?
How to invoke the mercy of?
Those who receive the second part of the Bhagavad.
Okay. when I carry around with me here, this is part one of Sri Brihat Bhagavatamrita that has two parts. The question that Narada has, who is the greatest recipient of the Lord's mercy, has as its conclusion, the greatest recipients of the Lord's mercy are the residents of Vrindavan. And amongst the residents of Vrindavan, the greatest recipients of the Lord's mercy are the gopis. But he doesn't just come out and say it. It's very intriguing narration with very complex drama and very moving narration. So part two is, having heard that from Maharaj Parikshit, his mother Uttara says, then how can one get the association and get the mercy of such persons who are receiving that mercy? Then part two is the answer to that question. In part two, I would say, just put it in a nutshell, it's two things: eagerness to have that mercy, and having faith in the instructions of those who have received that mercy, and particularly in Gopakumara's case, it's chanting of his mantra. That's the instruction that he holds on to. Through all the very intriguing things he goes through, his faith is with the mantra. He just keeps chanting his mantra. And that clears so many things time and again and again and again. Faith in that instruction and chanting of his mantra. And then getting, by the Lord's own arrangement, it's very, very fascinating how the Lord makes arrangements and even appears as persons in the whole search that he's on. Including his spiritual master is the Lord, coming into the disguise of an ordinary person, but is actually the Lord, and he's the one who gave him the mantra. But so seeking the association of such persons, being eager to receive that destination, eager to receive the ultimate destination of that association, and taking the instructions very, very seriously. particularly chanting the sacred mantra. But the statement that I highlighted here also is Hanuman is getting ready to go join Narada to go see the Pandavas without the unconditional so he wants to go and seek their association, but at least if we don't have the physical proximity of association, then praying to such elevated persons or hearing, like we're doing right here, hearing Sanatana Goswami passing on for posterity his ecstatic realizations. And when we hear, if we're hearing in a very prayerful mood, let the mercy of Sanatana Goswami enter into our hearts so that we can deeply appreciate and be inspired by the gift he wants to give us. A prayerful mood is required. Anything else? Yes?
My question is mother's question. This is about how, like, Krishna or his incarnations, when they kill a demon, it's usually through power or through a weapon.
It's usually what?
Krishna, his incarnations, they kill the demons to protect the devotees.
Yeah.
But there is one exception, and that is the case of, there is an exception in the case of Vamana Dev, where Bali Maharaj is not actually killed, but Krishna sort of asks him for something that appears to be a favor. So the question was, is Bali Maharaj any... Is he a different demon, or is he more pious than the other demons?
He's definitely more pious. He surrendered. He knew what was going on. He was the king of the Daityas, but he was a devotee. His grandfather. He knew. Sukracharya told him. This is not just a little boy. This is Lord Vishnu. And you know what he's going to do? He'll take everything. And that's bad. Because if he takes everything, then everything is taken away from me too. And he gives some other arguments that it's not good. You give everything, then you won't be able to do your rituals. And you can't do your religious duties as a grihastha. So you can't give everything. So don't agree to it. Or actually, you've already agreed to it, so I'll give you a loophole how you can get out of it after you've already... Because you didn't say Om afterwards, so... you can break that promise, it's okay. He knew. And in his heart, actually it's described elsewhere, as soon as he saw him coming from a distance, his desire, I just want to surrender everything to him. Even before the exchange began, I just want to surrender everything to him. That's not like Kamsa, Shishupal. Different. So his the reciprocation with the Lord was different.
Just one other little point on that, that our Lord Nrisimhadev, after killing Hiranyakashipu, he promised Prahlad that anyone born in his family he would not kill. And so Prahlad is actually the grandfather of Bali Maharaj. So that's just an added point, but of course Bali was very, very pious.
This question. a devotee, or he was just pious and then later on became a devotee?
Well, it's not like Vritrasura. Vritrasura, who was a Mahabhagavata Vaishnav, who was cursed by mistake or unfairly from his previous life, so just lived in that role as an asura, as a Mahabhagavata, and played a great part. So it's not the same with Bali Maharaj. He as the descendant or grandson of Prahlad, he had devotee tendencies, and in the association of Lord Vamana, those tendencies immediately were awakened. It was different. It wasn't like he's a devotee just waiting for his to play his part. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.